In the cinematic sea of prequels, sequels, reboots, and reimaginings, the Movie Retakes podcast considers the merits and desires for Hollywood's new takes on our beloved movie classics. Brothers Matt and Chris Sully examine the latest retake franchises, pitch their own original retake visions, and share their love for the movies that made them. This is Big Brother Chris Sully.
And this is the brother from the same mother, Matt Sully. Greetings and salutations, everybody. Welcome to Movie Retakes. Today is a very special day. We are covering Demolition Man.
John Spartan.
John Spartan?
That's right. They called him the Demolition Man.
One of the classic action films of the 90s. Oh man, it's a lot of fun. I think we're going to have some fun today, too. And while you're having fun, please go out and like and subscribe and all the places that you can do that sort of thing. We really, really appreciate it.
You know, something we haven't done to date, but I think it's very important to say a big, big thank you to anyone who's taken the time to subscribe, tweet about the podcast, and most importantly, leave a review, because that is a great way to support any podcast that you listen to. That's what helps Apple specifically know to show other people the podcast. Put it on the charts. Let other people know it exists. So even if it's not for us, if you listen to podcasts, leave a review if you can. We scoured through some of the many of thousands of reviews we received for the podcast. singles.
There's so many.
No, we've gotten some reviews, and it really does mean a lot
to us. Double
digits,
I think.
Yeah, well, we're double. We're working our way up. It's not a double-double, but a double. Several people have left some reviews for the show, and we want to take a moment each week to say a special thank you to those who are going out of their way to support us. Today's appreciation moment goes to Karma of Second Union via Apple Podcasts, who says, "The Sully brothers do a great job on breaking down the original, sequels, and the modernized remakes of films. Added bonus is to hear their visions of today's remakes and retellings. Brilliant." Thank you, Karma. Your review is brilliant. You're breathtaking.
Mm-hmm. No, you're breathtaking.
So we have a, like my brother said, we've got a great Demolition Man-focused podcast coming your way today. Spoiler alert, I love this movie. I know we're not supposed to do that yet, but I'm very excited about this. But we got a few questions we'll answer throughout the day. A little something for you to look forward to, such as, which scene in Demolition Man terrified Sylvester Stallone? What James Bond movie was named by accident? And who really won the fast food wars, Taco Bell or Pizza Hut?
Don't they have like the combo restaurants now? Like where you can go get both, right?
Yeah, they're all owned by Pepsi. Which is the only reason I believe that Pepsi is still available anywhere, because I think I know two people that drink Pepsi outside of those restaurants. It's Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, Long John Silver's, and there might be one more. So you see these weird pairings of like Long John Silver's and Pizza Hut. Like you can get fried shrimp pizza. I don't know if you actually can, but still.
Oh my.
I'd try it once.
No thanks. Yeah. It's weird when I go to one of those, the Taco Bell Pizza. I think it's Taco Bell and KFC.
Oh.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, KFC is one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. But I go up there and it never looks right. I don't want tacos and fried chicken. It just, I don't know why. Separately, they sound amazing, but together, I'm not on board. I can't do it. Though we used to go get the boxes of tacos, right?
Oh, like, yeah, the 10-pack.
In high school.
Mm-hmm. When they were 29 or 39 cents. That tells you how old we are.
Oh,
and now they're amazing. Like $7 a piece, I think. No, they're not that bad.
Gourmet tacos. Well, they are in Demolition Man, aren't they?
They are.
Everything's gourmet. What were you going to say?
I forgot, but I did recently. I've been at home. We all have, and I've been watching plenty of television, and I've seen a lot of commercials for Taco Bell. And so the other day, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna have Taco Bell. It's been a while, and so I used Grubhub and I made my first order. So I got a bunch of money off, and I had to order like $12 in order to get the discount. Ordering $12 in Taco Bell is still a challenge for a single person. So I had all this food left over. I had like a buffet at the house and only took bites of certain things that were hot garbage. But the OG tacos, still great.
Yeah. You're just gorging just so you could get the discount.
Exactly.
You're like, I can't eat anymore.
Well, it was either order like what I was going to order at like $7 and my total would have been like 15 with delivery and all that, or order 12 and the total was still 15. So, you know, numbers game. Got to play the math.
Hey man, I know we like to watch stuff. What are you watching these days?
Oh, I have been busy. For movies and TV, I'll start with movies first. I think I mentioned last week my love of Alexandra Daddario, who was on the Nerdist podcast, or on ID10T podcast. I watched her new horror film, We Summon the Darkness, which is now available for rental. I think it went straight to rental. It's actually pretty good. I'm not a giant horror movie fan. This one's a little bit more suspense than it is horror. I really like that. For TV, a lot of the shows that are still producing original content, I think I was a little wrong last time. There are still a few shows coming out with new episodes. The Rookie just finished a big season finale two-parter. That's the show with Nathan Fillion where he plays an older cop or older guy who becomes a rookie cop after he's like in his 40s. Great show. Fantastic. Nathan Fillion's always good. And then, I am down a rabbit hole. All my friends were talking about this. I had to jump in on it. There's two documentaries that you've got to watch right now if you consider yourself even the slightest sports fan in the world. One is The Last Dance, which is on ESPN, mm-hmm. and goes back and tells the story of Michael Jordan's career, specifically focused on their final season and the second three-peat that they actually complete. The show jumps back and forth through time, shows his rookie season, his life with his dad, all this stuff. It's very interesting. And not only is it great if you're a sports fan or a Michael Jordan fan, but also just kind of a look back in time. It shows you so much of the cool stuff in the 80s and 90s that I had forgotten about, to be honest with you, or hadn't talked about in years. And then there's kind of a companion show, which I don't know if it was on purpose or by accident, on Hulu called Unbanned. And it's the story of the AJ1, the very first pair of Air Jordan shoes, which even though I grew up in that time and desperately coveted a pair of Jordans, did not realize what a big deal it was for Nike, put them on the map, and for the NBA, who hadn't allowed players to wear shoes in any other color other than white and the team color up until then. Mm. And now you think of shoes as this huge industry and everybody has their own shoe and these bright, crazy colors and designs wasn't a thing at the time. Nike was barely on the map. So it's really, really cool. I highly recommend that. Again, Unbanned on Hulu, Last Dance on ESPN. And then I already spent a bunch of time on these movies and TV, so I'll blast through the others. Podcasts, How I Made This, ID10T, and Mark Marin, WTF, always good. And for games, doing my Mixer stream for Animal Crossing every day, Halo 5, playing a lot of Halo 5 again, Candy Crush, I just got Doom Eternal, which is a very big twist on the original Doom games, but I'm digging it. And I just downloaded today, because there's a special Animal Crossing event this weekend, Tetris 99, which is a competitive Tetris game against 98 other players every time you start a new round.
I still don't
understand it. I played like five or six matches, and I just know that if I wasn't moving quickly, I was getting my ass handed to me. And I thought of you with your Dr. Mario skills. I think you'd be really good at Tetris 99, but I think it's only on the Switch. So,
Yeah. If it's Dr. Mario, I'm down. I will take you down. I played, when they had that Dr. Mario came out recently, that other version, and you could play competitively and stuff. And I got on there and I did pretty well. There were some times where I'd get embarrassed because, you know, probably some six-year-old comes on there and, you know, some prodigy or whatever and would just bury me. But most of the time I could hold my own.
God, I can't beat you.
Back in the day, that was a good one. That's one of those where they have those sequences where you have the guy just staring into nothing and the numbers kind of go around and,
like a beautiful mind.
A beautiful mind sort of situation. That's me and Dr. Mario, where I just kind of stare through the screen and the pills just, you know, align themselves. Tetris is a little bit different. There's different shapes and stuff in there. I can do the pills with the colors, but Tetris is a little bit different.
Yeah, you're a downright idiot savant when it comes to Dr. Mario. Yeah. I see you just messing with me when we play against each other, and all of a sudden you'll cause like a 42 stack fall all at once, and I'm just sitting on the other end crying.
Yeah, I do set up some big drops, too. Yeah, it's fun. I finished season two of Happy. I know there was a big gap where I was watching that and then stepped away. I liked it. I think I liked the first season better.
Yeah.
But they just seem to be ramping up with the violence and the just the strangeness of that show. Like, they just probably sit around and think, how can we make this weirder? And they do. So I don't know what's in store for season three, but I'll come back and it's going to be wild, I'm sure. We're in season five, I think, of Schitt's Creek. So we're moving quite a rapid pace there and really, really liking it. It's a good show. We watched Dread with Carl Urban.
Oh, yeah.
I dig that movie. I've seen it a few times, and it's just one of those fun. It's kind of Demolition Man-y, in my opinion, where it's less campy. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, maybe it's probably similarly, but it, you know, just straight up action. You know what you're getting. They're not trying to build on any dramatic purpose here. There's no, you know, love story or anything. It's people going and shooting a lot of things, and there's plenty of gore and violence in that too, and it's just fun.
I really like Carl Urban. I think he's a highly underrated actor. He needs to be in more stuff.
Yeah, I've seen him in a few things. He's all right. I don't know. I like Dread. I think he fits that. So I think he could be a good action star. I can't really remember what else I've seen him in.
Star Trek. He played Bones. He was in Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You know, I didn't like him in Lord of the Rings. I thought he was kind of flat, but I did really like him in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So you're right. He does have some range. So I guess it just needs to be utilized properly. We watched David Fincher's The Game, which I've seen that a dozen times. Love it every time. If you haven't seen that one, that's high on my list of recommendations. You need to go watch that one. Anything by David Fincher, really. Podcasts. I was listening to this one called Ridiculous History. Couple of guys that I don't know how many episodes they're in, but they just find these random stories, which history is full of these, and so they've got content for ages. This one was about the husband and wife couple that wrote Curious George while they were on the run from Nazis. They were Jewish Germans that apparently, being authors of Curious George, got them out of a few hairy circumstances several times. So it's interesting. They find some interesting things to talk about. And then I was listening to one where they're talking about when it was very popular to drink gold back in the day, as another sort of snake oil sort of salesman come through town and selling people diluted gold to drink, you know, cure all sort of thing. Listen to a Tangent Versus episode, STS Guys episode.
Oh yeah.
Plot Thickens still going on about Peter Bogdanovich. I just watched today the second Josh Gad Reunited Apart.
Oh yeah.
It's all the Back to the Future gang.
I saw that.
Man, that was good. Just for him to get all these people together is so impressive. Like, he gets everyone.
Yeah.
Together. He didn't get Crispin Glover, though. We were just talking about him before the episode, but Crispin wasn't on there. But pretty much everybody else. I mean, he even had Huey Lewis come on.
That was a cool cameo. About. He looked good for his age.
He does look good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We saw him in concert probably like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
He did pretty well. He couldn't quite hit those high notes, but
happens.
It was still a decent showing. That was fun. We were probably the youngest people there. I think everybody else was 30 years older than
us. Wow.
We're the only ones without walkers and, you know, and oxygen tanks. We'll be there eventually. I have actually been trying to take a page from your book. You're out running and stuff, and so I've tried to get back into exercise. There's a website that I've used for years, not consistently, mind you, called darebee.com, darebee.com. Terrible name, because you wouldn't know what it is, but a great website. If you're going to work out at home, you don't need a lot of equipment or anything. This is very, very basic stuff, but what they put together is these different programs for you, and you could do all kinds of stuff. I'm just doing one for like toning right now, but then they also have these challenges where one of them, I've done a few of them, one of them is like a pull-up challenge where I ended up by the end of it, and this is just like a 1 month routine. You started where I could barely do one, and then by the end I was doing like 20 pull-ups.
Dang.
I also did one. I can't do probably half of one now. I did one where you end up planking for like 4 minutes, which I did, which is insane. But yeah, it's I think it's for everybody. You can find a program on there that's really good, and you can start really slow. They have all kinds of ranges and stuff, so I do recommend that. If you're doubting my nerdiness, though, I've also been watching this group called Hermitcraft, and they're all Minecrafters on YouTube, and honestly, I love it. It's like, you know, they're amazing builders and everything, but they're also very good entertainers. You know, they talk about their builds, and it's kind of they do their own sort of soap opera drama stuff where there's different storylines going on. It's very nerdy, but it's a lot of fun.
That's a good range. And yeah, you told me about that Derby site when I was visiting last. It's a great looking site, like really good design. And I need mm-hmm. to try that myself because I don't have access to much right now. That's why I've been running. But I also found a couple of weights and one of those stretchy bands. So I've got a few things. And now is the time to not just run, but also do some training, some weightlifting or body core stuff. Yeah, I need to do that too.
Yeah, but they've got so many different programs and stuff. You'll find something of their your level of where you want to work on. All right, so this is actually going to segue over into my special segment. But this, believe it or not, is a new recording of our first podcast episode, which was actually under a different name. So long ago, brother and I here, similar format. We recorded a Demolition Man episode as sort of a pilot. We originally called the show Should They? With a question mark at the end. It was a question we intended to ask of every retake, as in, should they make it or should they leave it alone? A question which my brother did ask during each movie retake's intro until recently. For bonus points, name the episode where we changed up the intro script.
Ooh.
Can you even know? Do you know?
Three?
I don't know.
Don't know.
it's in there somewhere. That's up to the viewers or the listeners. The Should They podcast became Movie Retakes quickly after recording the pilot episode, and I believe it's a much better fit. This renaming process is something that happens very often in Hollywood. So let's hear about some well-known movies that were almost known by a completely different name. Pixar's Toy Story seems like an obvious fit now, but the title considerations were many before the animated movie was finally brought to life. Among the potential titles were To Infinity and Beyond, Moving Buddies, The Cowboy and the Spaceman, and Toys in the Hood, with a Z on that. Tomorrow Never Dies was loose with the letters before finding its true bond. The original film title, Tomorrow Never Lies, was updated after a typo came through a fax regarding the film, and MGM liked the Tomorrow Never Dies over the original name, and that's the truth today. Pretty Woman was formerly known as 3,000, the dollar amount Julia Roberts' character charges for horizontal activity. Sci-fi movies seem more title troubled than most. Voyage Beyond the Stars became 2001 A Space Odyssey. Hunter shifted to Predator. Ridley Scott's Alien was entitled Star Beast.
Ugh.
Back to the Future was briefly suggested to be Spaceman from Pluto. Tonight He Comes was changed to Will Smith's Hancock. The book All You Need Is Kill became Edge of Tomorrow, but I've often seen this movie come up under its tagline name, Live, Die, Repeat. And before Blade Runner was thankfully called Blade Runner, they used the title of the novel it was based on called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Oh, wow.
Book titles were often working titles such as Shoeless Joe, which was later named Field of Dreams, and Wise Guy, which became Goodfellas. But sometimes working titles were purposely faked. Spielberg didn't want anything about E.T. leaked, so he titled his script A Boy's Life. Sometimes the marketing department is responsible for naming changes, as was the case with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which we covered in a previous episode. That movie was titled Bill and Ted Go to Hell. And sometimes the screenwriter fails to provide a title, intentionally leaving the catchy names up to the studios. American Pie was submitted under the name Teenage Sex Comedy That Can Be Made for Under $10 Million That Most Readers Will Probably Hate, But I Think You Will Love.
That's great. There's no way in hell the studio would ever have used it, so they'd have to change it. That's great. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, if you want more on that Back to the Future rename, watch that recent, what is it called? Reunited Apart. with Josh Gad and the Back to the Future cast, and they talk about that, and it's very interesting how there was a name change suggestion and it was immediately shot down in a really creative way. But I won't spoil it for you. Be sure to watch that.
That was good. I'm enjoying that. I'm glad Josh is putting that stuff together. It's pretty neat.
He's got a good spirit about it, and he reacts much the same way that any of us as fans would react, because he is a fan. And I saw that comment on YouTube while I was watching live, both of them. People are saying, Josh Gad is all of us right now, and I thought that was pretty perfect.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's relatable as an audience person, because he just doesn't come across as a celebrity. He's just a regular guy with a good heart, it seems, and an affinity for all the same things that that we love too. Well, one of the things we love is Demolition Man, and let's talk about it a little bit right now. A police officer has brought out a suspended animation in prison to pursue an old, ultra-violent nemesis who is loose in a non-violent future society. This stars, obviously, Sylvester Stallone. He never really took had a lull in his career. He did about 30 movies before Demolition Man, but after Rocky V, it looked like he was trying to switch to comedy. He did Oscar and Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. Then he course-corrected with Cliffhanger, which also came out in 93. Even after I looked this up, I couldn't believe it. Stallone is 73 years old.
God.
Watching that video of him recently.
Yeah.
That guy looks good.
He looks fantastic. He's in great shape. His hair looks amazing. Even though he's gone all gray, he looks great all gray. And
he does.
To know the injuries and the things he's been through in his career, he should have been dead five times over. How is he still going? This man is just sheer will.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing. I'm glad he's still working. He's putting out good stuff. And he's had a career of over 51 years acting, where he's averaged at least one project per year.
Wow.
So from the day he started, he hasn't had a year where there isn't a movie coming out. Well, on average. Wesley Snipes is his direct opponent in this. This is prime time for Wesley Snipes as an action star.
Bad A, Blondie. Spartan? John Spartan? Oh, shit, that ain't my age of the century. What the hell are you doing here?
He'd already done New Jack City, White Men Can't Jump. He'd done Boiling Point, Passenger 57, and Rising Sun with Sean Connery. And just amazing. Like, you see him becoming exactly what he's supposed to be, a huge action star. And when Demolition Man comes out, I mean, this is all action, and it's promoted as such, and both these guys do a great job. And it was nice to see them too join up again in Expendables 3 later on.
Yeah,
I'd like to see him in more, you know, and maybe we'll get to see him in Demolition Man 2. That'd be pretty rad. We are going to see him in Coming to America, Coming to America, the sequel.
Can't wait.
So I'm excited about that. Yeah, that's going
to
be good.
Don't you ever want something to happen?
Goodness, no.
I knew you were going to say that. What I wouldn't give for some action.
This is arguably Sandra Bullock's breakout role. She was in Love Potion number 9 before, which I know you and I both enjoy. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a blockbuster hit. It didn't have a blockbuster cast. Speed comes out 1 year later. The Net and While You Were Sleeping in 95. And from that point on, that secured her as a lead woman. And we know where it went from there. All good things for her. There's also starring Nigel Hawthorne as Dr. Cocteau, who did mostly British television. Benjamin Bratt, who had done Bound by Honor, One Good Cop with Michael Keaton. Dennis Leary's in this as Edgar Friendly. He's also the dad in The Sandlot, which, speaking of renames, this was also The Sandlot Kids was an alternate title for that, which I'd never seen that before.
Huh, me either.
But it's in a few places. That was in 93. Gunman, he was in as well with Christopher Lambert and Mario Van Peebles. Mario, man, where'd you go?
Right?
Because I like that guy, and he just kind of disappeared. We'll have to look into that. He was also in Judgment Night with Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr. Bob Gunton is in this, a Demolition Man, as well as Chief Earl. And he's known, you know him as the warden from The Shawshank Redemption. So you see his face and you want to punch it immediately. But he's pretty good in Demolition Man. And I don't know that he did too much after that. But Glenn Shadix is in this.
Greetings and salutations. I'm Associate Bob. We met before, ever so briefly. I was groveling in fear at the time.
Cool name. As Associate Bob, everybody probably knows him as Otho from Beetlejuice. That's where I know him from. And again, sort of not in the spotlight after this movie, really.
Quick sidestep on that before you move on. Judgment Night. I was just talking about this on my stream the other night. All-time best soundtrack of a movie that no one's ever heard of. When I was in high school, it came out, and it was before Limp Bizkit or Linkin Park or any of these other bands. It was an album of every song was a mashup of one rock band and one rap band or one rap star. That the opening track is Helmet and House of Pain, and it is perfection. If you ever get a chance, go listen to it. If you like rock or rap, I think you're going to dig it.
I remember seeing that disc in your collection. You'd have it there. I think you played it a lot.
Too. I wore out two copies playing it in my CD player.
Yeah. And I remember really liking that movie. Honestly, I haven't seen it in a long, long time. But just from the cast alone, I'd like to see that again. Who knows? That may have to be on our list.
Uh-huh.
Marco Brambilla directed this. This was his debut film, which is really impressive. He also did Excess Baggage 4 years later, less impressive. And it was his only feature-length film, his only other feature-length film. In his career, it was very strange to read. It seems like it was done out of order. He came out of the gate with a hit movie, did a not-so-great follow-up, then went into short film and television, and then finally music videos. Where most people would start in music videos like Spike Jonze or something and then you know, go the other direction. But yeah, Brambilla has faded into the music video world, and I don't know what's happening there now. Written by Daniel Waters. This is actually the director Mark Waters' brother, who also wrote Heathers in 1989, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane in 1990. I'm surprised that anybody but Andrew Dice Clay wrote that, because it's just so Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder how much the script actually was developed before he stepped into the role. Daniel Waters also wrote Hudson Hawk, which I really like that movie. Batman Returns, he wrote that. He had help on this script from Robert Renault, who also wrote Action Jackson in 1988 with the good old Carl Weathers. And some more help from Peter M. Linkov, who's mostly a TV writer, and he's currently probably the most active writer from this group that's still working. He's working on that new show, Magnum P.I., which is also a retake.
Oh, I see what you
did.
I have
not watched the new one.
Yeah. I didn't either. I watched the new MacGyver for the first season, but I did not watch the new Magnum P.I. yet.
I've heard it's good, and I think they're in season 3 or 4 mm-hmm. or something. I think
seems right.
They're going along pretty well. This came out, Demolition Man came out in 1993. Jurassic Park was number one at the box office that year with $914 million worldwide. Whew. Mrs. Doubtfire was there. The Fugitive, Schindler's List, The Firm, Sleepless in Seattle, and Cliffhanger, another Sylvester Stallone gem. Cliffhanger came out in June. Demolition Man came out in October. And Dennis Leary, the Judgment Night movie we were just talking about, came in October as well. So big time Dennis Leary, like this kind of stand-up comedian breaking out and having two movies out, two big action movies coming out at the same time. That's pretty impressive.
The mid-90s were big for Dennis Leary. He did a lot. Mm-hmm. He was in a bunch of different movies. The Ref, was that another one that was real popular?
That's
like you said, Sandlot. He did a lot, and then kind of faded away for a while, and then came back with Rescue Me, the television show post 9/11, which was a very good show, which I recently talked about as well.
I've been told by many people to watch that show, and I never did, but it's still on a backlog list of shows that I want to watch. Eventually, hopefully I'll get around to
it. I'd be interested to hear what somebody who just watches it now for the first time has to say about it. When it came out, it was right about the time when America was starting to emotionally deal with 9/11. And that show was a dangerous territory that they got into, but they did a wonderful job of navigating it. And I think it helped in a lot of ways emotionally deal with that.
Yeah, that same year, he did his stand-up special, No Cure for Cancer. I remember watching that one. That was funny. That was a good one.
He didn't sleep that year.
Yeah. I'm the enemy because I like to think. I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sit in a greasy spoon and wonder, gee, should I have the T-bone steak or the jumbo rack of barbecue ribs with the side order of gravy fries? I want high cholesterol. I want to eat bacon and butter and buckets of cheese, okay? I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati in a non-smoking section. I want to run through the streets naked with green jello all over my body reading Playboy magazine. Why? Because I suddenly might feel the need to, okay, pal? I've seen the future. You know what it is? It's a 47-year-old virgin sitting around in his beige pajamas drinking a banana broccoli shake singing, I'm an Oscar Mayer wiener.
No, not really. Well. He always seemed like he was on something.
Yeah, that's what I would have said too.
I think we also covered that in the Bill of Dead episode. Box office wise, this made $159 million worldwide. Now, this will come up later as possibly an argument in the figure of how much money this made, but it was off a $57 million budget. So it did I'm sorry about that. Rotten Tomatoes, however, says it didn't do so. It's a 59%.
I can't remember.
I strongly disagree.
I can't remember if it was our original recording of this one or another one, but I still would like to see a history of Rotten Tomatoes scores over time to know. And Rotten Tomatoes wasn't out when this movie came out, I don't believe. I think it came out a few years later. So. But what would it have been ranked then? I think it would have been much higher because this movie was hot when it came out.
Yeah. I read in doing some research, some people say this wasn't a hit, but I disagree. I mean, the numbers are there. Again, like argument over how much money it actually made was something the studio did with Stallone there. But I remember everybody seeing this movie. Like, it was big, and why wouldn't it be big? Stallone was huge.
Well, I mean,
Snipes was huge.
You also have to put that in context with I was in high school at the time. I vividly remember going to the theater, seeing the poster, getting excited about it, going on the opening weekend and checking it out. Was it the demographic at the time? Was it aimed at the MTV generation and didn't land well with people over 25, 30 years old at the time? I don't know. Because it was a different type of movie.
Yeah. And it's purposely campy in spots, and it's sort of satirical, and the action is even meant to be a bit cartoony in places. Mm-hmm. I think it comes down to probably a misunderstanding of critics in how to review something, and it's something we've talked about before, and I'm sure we'll talk about it many, many times. You can't literally compare every movie to every other movie. And within each genre, you can't do that. Like, there are action movies that fall into a certain line. I would not directly compare, like, Dredd to, well, either. Well, I might compare Stallone's Dredd to Demolition Man. I would not compare Carl Urban's Dredd to Demolition Man because they're just different types of action movies, just like comedy has. My God, comedy has so many different types of comedies that I'm not gonna compare Naked Gun to Annie Hall or something. Those are just two different worlds.
I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day when telling them that we were doing a movie podcast, and I'm like, well, there's a gazillion of those out there, and I'm like, yeah, but for me, when it comes to influencer marketing, which in a way is kind of what we're doing here, we're telling people about these movies that meant so much to us and recommending that people go watch them or avoid them or whatever. It comes down to a relationship with the person that's giving the review. If I listen to this podcast as an outsider and I agree with many of the reviews of the people who are putting on the podcast, then I'm going to start taking their word on future films.
I'm the same way.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope, really. And you and I have different opinions on different movies. We like different things. And so what I'm hoping for is that, some people will will start to align themselves with each of us individually. But then when we both come together and can collectively say, this is a great movie that you should watch, maybe for different reasons, then they'll, you know, take the word for it and be like, okay, well, the Sully brothers say yes, so I'm going to go watch it.
We haven't had a polarizingly different one yet, but I think that will come in time.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to purposely sort of skew. Yeah, have one that we know the other one won't like.
When we
all
eventually get to the Tokyo Drift episode, I think people will then totally understand. You already shook your head. You're like, oh, hell no.
I don't know if I'll watch one of those, but I can't make it through the slog of Fast and Furious. Furious, I get. Fast, I wish they were faster.
I'm all over both. All
right, so we are in the opinion time now. Let's talk about Demolition Man after a rewatch.
Yeah, I normally do a bulleted kind of recap of some things I saw during the movie. When we first watched this one back in February and did our original take before we're doing this retake of the podcast, I didn't do that. So going off memory, just a couple of things that really stood out to me, and I think you've said some of this already, but I'm gonna go ahead and reiterate it. Wesley Snipes, great role. As far as I'm concerned, this and Blade were probably his standout films of all time. I loved him in this villain role where he's over the top, maniacal, funny.
Is it cold in here? Or is it just me?
Full of one-liners. I love the bleached hair. I love just everything about him in this role. I cannot fathom another person having pulled this off. Stick around to the end for some great behind-the-scenes trivia and facts. Sandra Bullock was wonderful, and like you said, we had only really seen her in Love Potion number 9 to date. Boom. She lands in this. You love her. She plays that innocent but kick-ass female lead in a film. Kind of caught me off guard, I'll be honest. I did not expect that out of her when I saw her name attached to the film. So I was really impressed with that. Jesse Ventura, who had risen to fame already, had been famous for a while. It was in Predator and was amazing in it, working with Schwarzenegger. Here he now has the chance to work with Stallone, yet we don't hear a peep out of him in the whole movie.
Yeah.
I still don't understand that to this day. That is just mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling.
Yeah, I don't think he was meant to be a huge character. I'm pretty sure they cut some lines
from him.
I think there were a little bit more. But yeah, he was never really going to be like which is a shame, because in Predator, he's really good.
Oh, dug in like an Alabama tick. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, he was like he should be in the Expendables. I don't know what he looks like these days. I think he's changed his body type quite a bit. But, like, he was part of that generation of the 80s and 90s, like, manly men, you know? And this was great to include him and then do nothing with him. Yeah, I'm with you. There must have been a chunk that was deleted for time or something.
Well, and he was in Running Man, too, wasn't he? Yeah.
Oh.
When did that come? With Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that was late 80s. Mid to late 80s. I would go, like, 86, 87, maybe.
87, you nailed it.
Wow. That's rare. Usually I'll be the other direction off a couple years. I love this movie overall. Again, I don't have a lot of bulleted items here.
Same year as Predator. Sorry.
What's that?
Didn't want to cut you off, but same year as Predator. Big year for him and Schwarzenegger.
No kidding. Two films out in the same year. Both of them great action flicks. I prefer Predator all day long, but still. Yeah, I just love this movie. I watched it in the theaters. I mentioned this earlier. I remember seeing the poster. I wish I had the poster, honestly. This is one I would add to my collection. I'd love it to have it signed by both of these guys, Stallone and Wesley Snipes. I think that'd be a great piece with a light box. And when we get to the very end, I'll share a couple cool stories about my relationship with Demolition Man and how it came back up for me just a few years ago. So stay tuned for that. But I got this movie. I bought it on VHS when it first came out, which was a task. That was a commitment back then because movies weren't cheap. This was like I think I spent a lot of money on this movie. And when I got to college, my roommate watched this movie every day. He wore out my VHS copy of this and Ace Ventura when he was skipping class. He was a real top-notch individual. And so I got to watch it so many times. I'd walk in and I could just pick up quoting it wherever it was in the film. I could hear the music and know what scene was about to happen next. I don't think I will ever not love this movie. I think it's something I'll watch again and again and again across all of time, as long as I'm around. I really hope that we get a sequel for it and we get an amazing continuation.
Yeah. I was never one to, well, I guess I hadn't really thought about it too much until recent years, because Demolition Man for me, also a great association with this movie. I've enjoyed it the first viewing, and I've seen it many times since then, because it embraces the silliness of action, you know, where there was so much, you know, like Predator is an amazing film, but it's very, very serious about its action, right? And then this comes out and it kind of plays with it, is where we can have a bit more fun with this. We can purposely be kind of stupid and have these one-liners that we're aware that they're the one-liners, you know? I like that sort of thing. It makes it more fun, and it kind of takes away the, you know, because there's some violence in this, and they even edited out some more of the things after first audience viewing that were even gorier, but there's still some in here, but it never really feels like too much. Like, you're having fun with it, and you could tell everybody else is having fun with
it. It's a great balance of sci-fi, comedy, action, and even a little, very tiny amount of suspense in there. When you're trying to figure out what's going to happen and is there a twist and things like that. There's not many movies that can check all those boxes. I mean, I may think of like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies kind of fall into that same realm, much more sci-fi on those. But still, that is a tough balance to strike. And they did it. They nailed it with this movie.
Yeah. And I think before we were totally inundated with, you know, time travel movies, like there's at least three of those come out every year. This was fun, the idea of, because we were already, I can't remember when rumors were out about, you know, Walt Disney being frozen, you know, cryogenically frozen or whatever, but I'm pretty sure it was common talk about freezing as a potential thing to, you know, to come back, you know, to, well, which my pitch will actually cover this a little bit as well, you know, in case there's any disease or something that you know, further research will come back to cure you and all that, or they'll just figure out how to extend life forever. There was all kinds of rumors of people going into cryogenically frozen stasis to come back later on. But the idea of it being somewhat grounded in fact, or something we would accept, that rather than him stepping into a time machine, that was kind of interesting, and then taking us into the future in that way, where we'd see how something might develop. And that's one of the things we will talk about a little bit too, and in both our pitches, I'm pretty sure, is, you know, how this implies that there is, this is the future in a lot of places, but also that it might be very isolated, that this there could be so much more going on. But anyway, this movie's a lot of fun, and it's dated. You know, you're gonna watch this and you're gonna be like, well, this doesn't, you know, this isn't the timeless sort of thing that's gonna fit in every generation. But going into that, I think everybody could still enjoy this movie quite a bit.
I think it could be a little dated, but it could have been way worse. Like, they didn't rely on CGI. They used a lot of practical effects for the things that they did. So there's, you know, you don't see those flaws. And I think they did a pretty good job, too, of pushing out the future, I'm putting in air quotes, to a time far enough where this is believable. Like other movies, Back to the Future 2, we've already passed that date. They put this in, what, 2032 or 2037?
32, yeah.
So it's going to be, you know, a dozen years before we get there. By then, all that still seems very feasible.
Well, yeah, because there's no flying cars in this. They have automated driving cars, which we have already. So what else do they have? They basically have the...
Anti-graffiti walls?
They're, Yeah. I don't know if we have that technology, but...
Batons that'll knock you out.
Yeah, those are basically like stun guns.
Yeah.
But I mean, the big thing here is they had a huge cultural shift where it's, you know, no violence, sex, curse words, or bad food or anything. That's never going to happen. Not in America, anyway. We love our fast food, and I don't think we're going to see everything go. We'll keep Taco Bell, but we're also going to have dozens of other options. So I don't see this. And in that, I think knowing that too, when we go in to watch this movie, how silly the concepts are that we know they're never going to happen. We're then, you know, allow ourselves to be kind of sucked into this fantasy world, and it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well. So we're both recommending to go watch Demolition Man, but we have to talk about our own Demolition Man pitches. Now, we had written these a while back.
Mm-hmm.
Did you rework yours at all?
I made a couple of very slight tweaks, but for the most part, 95% of what I'm going to pitch today was the same one that I had before. How about you?
I changed mine up.
Did you?
Because, I reread mine, and I'm like, there really wasn't much to it. I was kind of just being goofy and playing more with fun titles and suggestions of more concepts, but I didn't really flesh out the story too much, so I tried to do that a bit more here. And since I was slacking on previous episodes, I made sure to pick a director and actors that are going to be in this. I keep dropping the ball on that.
Well,
so I'll
defer to you if you'd like to go first, then.
Yeah, I'll do that. I think you were first to the last couple of times. So this will be a true sequel. We'll have Stallone in it as current age, playing the same role. I'm not going to bring Sandra Bullock back for this one. I think she's moved on from action, and it would be kind of an awkward fit to have her in this now, returning to that role. Benjamin Bratt, I really enjoyed from the first one. And he comes into his own at the beginning or at the end of Demolition Man. And I think he deserves a bit more screen time. So I'm going to have him as the new police captain of San Bernardino. Angela Spartan, Spartan's daughter, will be played by Sigourney Weaver because age-wise, they should actually be fairly similar. Emily Spartan, John's granddaughter, will be played by Emily Blunt. I want a... she's a good age for this, and we've seen her in some action, and I want her to kick some ass on screen. She's the new Demolition Woman. For action, I always think of John McTiernan, and I think he'd be pretty cool. So, you know, speaking of Predator, one of the things I do love about the first one is the campiness, but for this one, I'd like it to be a bit grittier, if you will, a bit more action focused and not quite so much comedy. So a little bit of a different feel. And a couple notes here. The first Demolition Man touches on a few things that I think deserve some more screen time. One is the world outside San Angeles. We never really know what life's like out there. The closest we get is the Cocteau virtual conference with several mystery faces of possible investors or city council members. I'm saying that those are sister city leaders. So they're sort of Cocteaus in different areas of California.
Cocteaus.
Yeah, I know. The other glossed over thing in the first one is that Stallone has a daughter. He mentions her, dismisses seeing her, and then the issue is just done. I'd like to see more of that relationship, but given she's a similar age character-wise, I'd rather have someone younger to offset things and pick up the real action, so that's going to be Emily Blunt, his granddaughter. So that said, here's the basics of what I propose for Demolition Man 2, Slash and Burn. For his work in alleviating the threat to San Angeles in 2032, John Spartan's original prison sentence was expunged, and he was invited to continue his law enforcement career through the tumultuous landscape he helped create. Though not all were happy to see Cocteau's serene society ruined by the Demolition Man, sister cities of San Angeles were in the midst of their own master plans of aggressive gentrification, and many who prospered in their modern civilization preferred to keep the status quo. As civil wars erupt throughout California, John Spartan brings justice and equality to the masses while being simultaneously condemned as a danger to the faux utopian worlds cultivated over the years. In a 7-year time lapse, we watch John Spartan gather and train an elite force of rebels, which includes his estranged daughter, Angela Spartan. In his own destructive fashion, Spartan breaks down the pillars of the new world while bonding with his daughter through gun battles and unnecessary explosions. When the dust begins to settle and people find their way, a tentative peace is found and the Spartans pull back from the spotlight. John opens a small tailoring business. Angela, along with her 15-year-old daughter, Emily, help with the store, but their happily ever after is cut short. This is still part of the, the speedy time lapse here. We see John getting sick from some mysterious disease, and when the doctors shake their heads at an optimistic outcome, it suggests that they freeze him while research on the disease continues. He's going back in the fridge. Frightened but furious over time already lost with his daughter, he agrees to be cryogenically frozen once again. Cut to 2059, San Bernardino. Emily Spartan is in the midst of a wild car chase. She's a wild cop who takes crime personally. She never lets a perpetrator get away, and she can't keep a partner for more than a week. After a dangerous pursuit, Spartan crashes her car, then calls down a police drone to catch a ride into the sky. She lands on the car of the men who just robbed another rich neighborhood as they were attempted to cross into Los Angeles. There's a makeshift wall surrounding the city that has removed itself from New California, and its lawlessness makes refuge for criminals. As Spartan pulls the robbers from the vehicle and beats the crap out of them, a nearby explosion sends chaos into the streets. The robbers flee, and Spartan abandons pursuit to aid those hurt by the blast. Back at the police station, we discover this was another in a series of attacks against the city of San Bernardino, once a part of San Angeles decades ago. Spartan is fed up with the department's inability to bring law to L.A. The city and state have failed in negotiations and been beaten through years of combat. The people of L.A. are an army of well-trained soldiers that no one can defeat. Spartan wants to go in and take down their infamous leader, but no one will support her. She needs a soldier that isn't afraid, kicks mass. She needs Grandpa John. As his relative, Emily is granted power to bring John out of cryogenics despite there being no advancement in the cure of his disease. When John is thawed and discovers who Emily is, he asks about his daughter, Emily's mother. She tells him that she's trapped behind enemy lines and needs his help to get her out. He agrees, knowing that every minute outside the fridge brings him closer to death. John and Emily Spartan sneak into Los Angeles to find out where Angela might be, only to be discovered as police officers by a local gang. It's during captivity they hear that Angela Spartan is somehow tied up with those that rule L.A. She's staying within City Hall's fortified tower, a building able to withstand an 8.2 magnitude earthquake, that's an actual thing, and fitted with turrets, anti-aircraft guns, and concentric barriers of defense. The pair of Spartans break free from the gang and begin a one-hour nonstop path of destruction, unleashing hell on L.A. as they work their way up the chain of command. Unfortunately, John isn't the demolition man he used to be, and his illness was far more advanced than even he thought. When they finally breach City Hall and find LA's top dogs, John is coughing up blood and he can hardly stand. What's worse, it turns out that Angela Spartan, John's daughter and Emily's mother, is the badass leader of the lawless city and its ruthless army. After seeing her father do so much in the name of the law only to dwindle from her life again, Angela decided to live according to her own rules and create a world of anarchy. John realizes, too, that Emily knew all along her mother's role in L.A. and that she thought John could convince Angela to give up her throne and return lawless L.A. to California. John begs Angela to consider Emily's proposal, but she refuses. Only after John falls, clearly dying from his disease, does she promise to turn over a new leaf. She wants him to go back into cryogenic stasis, but he says it's too late. He's had enough time in the fridge. Besides, he says, every time he comes out, things are a mess. The walls of Los Angeles are torn down amid celebration, and a statue of John Spartan is erected on the city's border. Angela and the people of L.A. are granted immunity as per the peace negotiations, and Angela reopens Spartan Tailoring. She asks her daughter if she thinks the Spartan family can really live peaceful lives as Emily receives a call on the police radio. Emily says, probably not, Mom. Grandpa John is probably blowing shit up in heaven as we speak. I hope so, anyway, because life without danger is pretty boring. Emily speeds off on her motorcycle, siren blaring, and passes the statue of her grandfather. The engraving says, John, Demolition Man Spartan, Savior of San Angeles.
Nice. I like it. I like it a lot.
You can see watching Dread sort of influence there, and then also I'm kind of thinking of like Escape from New York, where he's got, you know, time, his clock is ticking as he goes in and has to, you know, do the last mission or whatever.
I like that you worked in, I think we joked about this before, the fact that he knew how to do the knitting because he had gotten that training in his brain when he was cryo-frozen the first time.
I mean, how come I know what a zipper foot and a shuttle and a hook and bobbin and a petty point is? I can weave a throw rug right now with my eyes closed.
So that's great that you worked that in. And then I have a question for you. This trophy or the statue that they'd put up for John Spartan, would that be at the top of steps of an iconic building somewhere with his arms raised in the air, maybe?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I kept trying to think what would be the appropriate thing for like a demolition. I would think he'd have the actual guns that are fired off every hour or something into the air, but I don't know. Some random thing explodes around him. Yeah, you have to keep your distance from that statue. You don't want to, to run up next.
How funny if they did that and they somehow worked those same steps from Rocky in, and then they constructed that statue and then later moved it down to the left side so you could go visit Rocky and John Spartan and get your photo in front of both in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't think we can have too many Stallone statues. I think
when's Schwarzenegger going to get his for Dutch? Very similar. Just hold a giant machine gun with a cigar sticking out of his mouth. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Good pitch. I would definitely like to watch the movie you came up with. There were some great twists in there. I mean, my jaw literally dropped with the big twist about his daughter being the leader of the opposing forces. That was great.
Well, so he trained her, basically. Yeah. And so she went and trained all this army, and that's why they're so good, is because they were, trained by John Spark.
That's awesome.
Down the line.
Well done.
All right.
Well, I will say mine, you kind of alluded to the fact that our first pitch, or your first pitch was a little shorter. So is this one. It was back when we did that first take. I still liked it, though, when I read through it. I'm like, you know what? It's a good structure. It leaves a lot of blanks to be filled in, but I'm sticking with it. I dig it. So, your title for yours was, again?
Slash and Burn. Kind of a idea of destruction that then leads to, new growth and change.
With McTiernan directing. I like that. Mm-hmm. All right. I've got a title of mine is Demolition Man Spartan Force. And I'm going to go with the Keanu Reeves stunt double turned badass director of the John Wick series, Chad Stahelski. Because as far as I'm concerned, no one is doing action better than this man right here now. He is a pro. The stars, Sylvester Stallone to return, along with, in small doses, Sandra Bullock and Dennis Leary, and Benjamin Bratt will return. And then I'll tell you another bit of casting as we get into the story here. This is set another 27 years into the future in 2059. In the aftermath of the first film, we fast forward 27 years to a time when the underground people, originally run by Dennis Leary, and residents of San Angeles have both cleaned up a bit and dirtied up a bit, respectively. Everyone has learned to live in harmony, but a new common enemy has appeared, the Outsiders. Spartan has become head of police with Benjamin Bratt, Alfredo Garcia was his character name, his second in command. He's embraced his new role, but still struggles with phrases and references and still prefers the old jingles to the newfangled music that has taken over San Angeles. They've trained the new police force in the tactics of the 20th century, just in case another threat appears. The focus in the opening is an officer in her 40s, leader of a special unit called Spartan Force. This unit was created to investigate the growing issues surrounding the Outsiders. She takes on a couple of Outsiders who invade the city, easily taking them down in an epic fight scene. And then, as they are cuffing the Outsiders, another member of the SAPD calls her by her last name, Spartan. It's Spartan's granddaughter, played by Lena Headey. I keep going to her. I don't know why. I love her and stuff. She's great. Her name,
she's awesome.
She is awesome. Her name is Serena Spartan. This is the early big reveal. The Outsiders are the fallout, put that in quote, the fallout victims and bloodlines of the great earthquake of 2010 that were trapped outside the city limits. Major cities and areas around the country had essentially walled themselves off from the rest of society to protect their own. So we have a very similar thing going with our stories. Things have worsened to the point that the Outsiders have begun attacking major cities in search of food and medicine, similar to the underground people from the first movie. Things elevate and Spartan, the granddaughter, chases an Outsider to the outer limits of the city, only to be trapped by a band of Outsiders led by a new character, masked, so we don't know who he is. Spartan Sr., Stallone, still in magnificent shape, gears up in what is surely to be a magnificent montage scene, and heads out with Garcia, Benjamin Bratt, to rescue the granddaughter. On their journey, they find out that there are still remnants of society pre-1994 that are somewhat intact. There's a bunch of great references to the 90s, including some shots of Wendy's locations that have now been transformed into something else, victims of the great franchise war, and a Blockbuster Video, because shout out to Blockbuster Video, neither of which serves their original purposes. Eventually, Stallone's character Spartan must take on the leader of the Outsiders in an epic battle, and it turns out to be a descendant of Simon Phoenix, played by Terry Crews. It turns out that Dr. Raymond Cocteau had been experimenting with Simon Phoenix's DNA during those years of cryosleep, and had engineered several additional weapons to be used against Edgar Friendly in the event that his Simon Phoenix plan didn't work. They are bigger, stronger, and faster than any normal human, and there are dozens of them that are basically clones, but each deformed slightly as a result of experimentation gone wrong. The Terry Crews version was the best of the bunch, intelligent and built like a tank. In an epic battle, John Spartan and the Spartan Force take on the Outsiders. They are outmanned, or should we say out-phoenixed, and outgunned. The Outsiders had also been well-equipped. But Spartan and the team had been training and creating their own new weapons, mashups of current technology and old, that the Outsiders simply could not be prepared for. The Spartan Force comes out on top, and Serena Spartan is rescued. The team returns to St. Angelus, and they celebrate at Taco Bell, which looks a little different now compared to what we saw in the first film. So credits roll, but there's a post-credit scene that reveals another threat found in the remnants of one of the Outsiders' locations. Actual clones of Simon Phoenix in chambers that are activated as a result of the final fight scene. The clones are waking and have one mission in mind: kill Edgar Friendly.
Poor Edgar.
Man, for a guy whose last name is Friendly, he really gets picked on, doesn't he?
So we get two movies from you, essentially.
Yep.
Like, it's going to continue on. And so what, Dennis Leary has to come back for the third one?
Yep. And so does so does Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, it's nice. I like that. And I'll pretty much guarantee you that my mind in this rewrite probably went back to your pitch, and I probably stole those things from you, like the walled city and the granddaughter and stuff. But I do think that we don't know much about the new Demolition Man 2, and I guess we can go ahead and segue over.
I'm glad we don't yet. I think that's a good part of what makes our pitches so fun, because the what ifs. What if it turns out that one of these movies that we've predicted becomes what they make? Like, what if we even nailed the casting? How awesome would that be?
Oh, that'd be cool. And this, if there's anyone that has a chance of that the most, I mean, we've had no influence really about this at all. So there's no chance of us being tainted in our pitches here. These are all original. Here's what we do know. There's little detail other than Stallone saying it was going to happen. There's been rumors and hints at Demolition Man 2 past years, which have never gained traction. But here's why I think this time might be different. Let's get a little history lesson here. In recent years, 2017, Stallone sued Warner Brothers over Demolition Man, claiming the studio covered up how much money the film made and cheated his production company out of its fair share of grosses. The studio initially said the movie was $66 million in the hole, but later sent him a check for more than $2 million. According to the lawsuit, Stallone claims that his company is entitled to 15% of the movie's grosses, which he said have exceeded $125 million. So that's where I was talking about arguments over this movie actually made. In 2018, Stallone amended the suit to allege that he had not received adequate payments for three other films: The Specialist, which I like that movie, Cobra, which is one of my wife's favorite movies and it's messed up, and Tango and Cash, which is a great movie. And the two sides have been battling over that for a while. Now, in 2019, the suit was, according to Warner Brothers, amicably resolved. So the settlement details are confidential. We don't know what really came out of that. But if that's the case, if all those studio money issues are resolved, given Stallone's current screen power, or ongoing screen power, he's never lost it, and obvious love for continuing his own franchises, which he's done with pretty much everything else, I think now makes sense. I think we might actually get a Demolition Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that same, was it an Instagram Live or an Instagram video that he posted last week, and he didn't just say, eh, it feels like Demolition 2 might happen, or Demolition 2, we're talking about it. He was like, oh, it's happening. It's you'll see it soon. Like, there was no hesitation in his voice.
Well, and I don't know that, given, I don't know what the contract or whatever was with Warner Brothers, but part of the settlement may have been
ownership rights.
Take ownership.
Yeah. Over.
So if that's the case, maybe he settled with that and he's going to run with it and do any movie he wants, because this guy can produce any movie that he wants to make.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the big studio to back him at the beginning. He'll need him for distribution or whatever. But yeah. So I think there's a freedom there. And, you know, even if he wants to work at Warner Brothers, if it's amicable, as they say, then especially if he got all the money he was owed, then yeah, why not? He could do another movie as long as the contract's correct and he knows he's going to get paid. Then sure, all the right cogs are in place to make this a moving vehicle. And so there was actually, I scoured the internet. Yeah, right. I looked, you know, through a few dozen sites, but I love when people say they research something. Like, you went to Google and you spent 5 minutes.
Yeah. Like, you have to go to the library and look through microfiche. Calm down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I did look, and there was only one spot that had any info, and it's highly doubtful that anybody knows any real details. But they did mention clones of Phoenix to bring Wesley Snipes back. But that's probably just a stab in the dark, because if you're going to bring back Demolition Man 2, just like we were saying at the beginning, this is equally a Wesley Snipes movie as it is Stallone. So yes, despite my pitch, I would want to see both of them back. No matter how crazy the scenario is, I still want to see him, you know. Maybe it's his twin brother. I don't care.
I wish our episode here had come out like a month ago so I could call that site out for stealing our ideas.
Like, well, I thought of that too.
Like, you sons of bitches. We have the original audio files that prove we've had this idea 2 months ago.
Yeah. There was this 1 year time period where my buddy Juan in college, we would sit around and we'd talk movies and scenarios and just different like comedy sketch ideas. And I swear to you, he had 6 different ideas that came out as commercials within that same year. And we were like, somebody's bugged your apartment, man. Like, they figured out you are the brainchild of all these brilliant concepts and they are just running with them. You got to sue. It was more than coincidence. Like, you know, 1 or 2.
Yeah.
But 6? It was like 6.
That's crazy.
That was insane. One of the rumors when they were talking a couple of years back about doing Demolition Man 2 is that I think it was like the head writer or producer or something was suggesting Meryl Streep come out as Stallone's daughter. I've seen that in a few sites.
Yeah.
It was immediately shot down by Meryl Streep, apparently. But I don't even know why would you give that any feet? Like, it doesn't mix. Like, who cares? Like, I mean, that's a fun fact, I guess, but not if it's also a movie that never got made. I don't know. It's a weird
and thing. What weird casting. That's just a wrong direction as far as I'm concerned. Meryl Streep's great, but not in this genre.
Yeah, I wouldn't put her in this. No. Either, so. Yeah, so unfortunately, this is going to be an episode of our podcast here where we don't have a release date. We don't have writers, directors, all that sort of stuff, which normally I like to provide. But still, there is, I think, some good potential for this to be made.
Yeah.
And we can always revisit later on down the line. But yeah, fingers crossed that this one actually does get made, because I think it's in the same sort of slot with Rambo and Rocky for in my opinion. I know a lot of other people don't care about this movie at all. They think it's kind of a throwaway thing. But I liked his character in this, and I liked the movie, and I'd like to see more John Spartan.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely possible. And I alluded to this fact, but I want to talk a little bit about how the popularity of this film, I think, has not died, and my relationship with the film going to just a couple of years ago. As I said, I've always been a fan of this movie. And, you know, I work at Funko now, and people are always pitching ideas. Surprisingly, not many people have ever said Funko should make Demolition Man pops. But I think it would be amazing. I'm not confirming anything. I don't have that power. If it were up to me, it would be on the list. It is not up to me. But here's my point. I'm rambling on. Taco Bell pop-up at SDCC 2018. Just, there's no news that really comes out before San Diego Comic-Con until, like, the month to the 2 weeks before. The studios, the comic book companies, almost all of them keep it pretty close to the vest. Or, and I think this is a stronger theory, they're scrambling to put something together to make the most of this. It's the center of the nerd universe. This is a place to celebrate and talk about what's coming to promote your upcoming films and television shows. Yet, in 2018, for whatever reason, Taco Bell worked with, I guess, the movie studio to make a Taco Bell pop-up based on a futuristic Taco Bell celebrating Demolition Man, which at the time I think was how many years? 30? What year did this come out?
Oh, from when it was 93.
So 25 years. So it was a 25th year anniversary celebration. But why? Why do you do that unless you're getting ready to test the waters to see what the answer, like what the buzz is, how many people are interested in seeing something like this, or you're laying the very early groundworks for advertising for a project you know is coming? That's actually my theory, is kind of a combo of the two.
Well, and from what I read, a little bit of research, that whole Taco Bell thing, they embraced it fully and ran with it, and there was advertising that came out, you know, huge thing with the movie, and it did very well for them.
Yep.
Like Taco Bell sales went up quite a bit. So it may have nothing to do with the movie. Taco Bell just wanted to pull out some old advertising or remind people that they'll be the restaurant of the future. So.
That's possible too. I mean, SDCC is all about pop culture, and that was a big item 25 years prior. But let me tell you what, they didn't give a lot of details on this. I got over there early because I was fortunate enough to be at San Diego Comic-Con, and I went looking for where this was going to be because this was my main thing of that con other than working. I walked all over the gas lamp area. I found where they were building it. 24 hours prior, they weren't even halfway into getting this thing done, but they pulled it off and they got it ready for when they said they were going to open it. The exterior had the futuristic Taco Bell logo. You can look this up. It's all, there's photos out there. I just found out today. I kept joking. I'm like, hey, would it be cool if Stallone or Snipes showed up at this thing? I never heard a peep. I found pictures today that Wesley Snipes did show up at the event.
What?
He was there holding a Taco Bell bag or a shirt or something. There was a glass case in there that had one of the costumes from the movie. I waited in line. I found a person, a friend that was in line already, got in line with him, waited for 3 hours. He had already been waiting for hours. We barely moved because apparently what they were doing inside was actually serving that tiny food in a restaurant format. And then they had a counter where they were selling t-shirts, enamel pins, and some other memorabilia from the show or from the movie. And I waited with him for hours, but I had another commitment and I had to leave about 200 feet from the door. There were thousands of people lined up going all the way through there back to the convention center. This thing was popular and not in like way popular. I've seen other attractions there not draw nearly that many people. I didn't get in, but luckily I have very good friends. I got a t-shirt that says San Angeles on the front and has the Taco Bell Demolition Man logo on the top back, which I love.
Cool.
I've worn it a few times. And I got a Taco Bell enamel pin with that futuristic logo, which I love. I'll have to snap some pictures and share after this episode goes up. I love it. I would not part with that pin. I should look on eBay. Maybe we could scoop some up for a giveaway or something. I don't know if it's worth a lot. It is to me because it's such a cool piece as part of my movie fandom over the years, you know? But I think there's something to that event that even if it wasn't the plan to test the waters, showed them how popular this still is. I think it may have helped to get the ball rolling.
Well, that's a good point. And maybe there was something else that was actually coming. Maybe there was comic books or something coming off of this at the time that, I don't know. Maybe there was some toy launch that you didn't know about or something that could have been going on. I don't know. That's interesting.
It's interesting you bring that up. If that had happened, if those things were out, I probably would have heard about them. I'm pretty close ear to the ground when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I didn't see anything. Now, if you go back to 1993, when we were researching for this back in February, I didn't know these existed, but apparently Mattel made a series of Demolition Man action figures for the movie. There are eight in total that I've found. I threatened to buy these 2 months ago and still haven't done it, but I think I'm about to pull the trigger. Several versions of Simon Phoenix, several versions of John Spartan, and then some supporting characters. And they all don't look hardly anything like they did in the film. It was like they went full comic book. So they look like He-Man action figures. They're all, I mean, which that's what Stallone looks like, but they're all look like that. And I'll have to share a photo of them. They're very hard to explain. It's almost like the real Ghostbusters version of Ghostbusters. It's like that of Demolition Man, but they look great. I would love to have a set in my collection just because I love that kind of crap. I think that'd be amazing. There's a ton of photos. They've sold over the years many times, but I'd love to see more of that. I think it'd be great to bring them back as any form, action figures, pops, whatever, some sort of figures.
Yeah.
And then very recently, I was just talking about in the beginning of this episode, I've been watching The Last Dance, which is about Michael Jordan and the Bulls from the 90s. One of the key components of the second run for the second three-peat was Dennis Rodman. And I think anybody, if you ask what Dennis Rodman is, who he is, you're immediately going to think of crazy colored hair. In the documentary, The Last Dance, they show when Dennis Rodman first joins the Bulls. He was already kind of a bad boy, but he wasn't this Hot Topic employee-looking bad boy at the time. He he takes his hat off and shows blonde hair, and in that segment, they reference Demolition Man had just come out at theaters, and Dennis Rodman dyed his hair similar to Simon Phoenix. That was the only reference to it, but I thought it was pretty great that, you know, maybe he did attribute it to that movie. Maybe it was just some sort of, you know, subtle, he saw it and didn't think about it, thought it would be cool. Whatever. It had an impact. Yeah. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is. And I like that idea. I was trying to think of other restaurants or anything. It would be a cool concept for these conventions and stuff to always have a themed restaurant. If they could pull it from a movie or a comic book or a game or something like that, that'd be pretty cool.
That would.
Super Mario's mushroom pizza place or something. I don't know, but hopefully nothing plumbing involved.
Well, and it definitely is a theme that the studios take over and they'll do a restaurant based on an upcoming TV show or movie, but it's usually just like a giant billboard that you step into. It's not as direct a reference to and as cool as what Taco Bell
did. Yeah, no. Yeah, that needs to be like properly like altered to like, be, you know, as if it existed in that
world. Do a Bob's Burgers, an actual Bob's Burgers. How cool would that be?
Yeah, that's a great idea. All right, so we are switching over into trivia time.
Yeah.
This is a lot of fun. You go ahead and kick off this one here.
Okay. Wesley Snipes' kicks and punches sometimes look lurchy and awkward in the film. Snipes is an accomplished black belt in real life, and his kicks and punches were so fast that they blurred on camera. To capture the movements on film, the producers asked Snipes to slow down. Wow.
I'd heard that was an issue with Jet Li when he was in The Lethal Weapon. What was that, 3 or 4? I think it was 4.
Yeah.
And it still looks crazy fast on camera. But yeah, they had to ask him to, you know, do it at quarter speed or whatever because the dude was just way too fast. Sylvester Stallone described the cryogenic freezing scene as probably the worst 5 hours I've ever had on movie sets. I was terrified.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Because they did it with practical effects and it wasn't just water. It looked like some sort of glycerin, some sort of weird gooey substance. He really got in there. Oof. Terrifying.
Yeah, I would have been freaking out too. Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone wanted Simon Phoenix to be played by Jackie Chan. Chan declined since Asian audiences don't like the idea of actors who have always played heroes suddenly playing evil characters. Would not have worked. Jackie Chan is great. I love him. He can't pull off what Snipes did with Phoenix.
No, it would have been totally different. I love Jackie Chan as well. But yeah, there's a role for everybody, and I don't think that was his. Sandra Bullock replaced Lori Petty after a few days of filming. Petty left due to creative differences. And I looked this up. She had just come off of A League of Their Own. I think probably her was her image, self-image was a bit hyped because come on, you're Lori Petty. You didn't do too much. Tank Girl was your big one after that. So, yeah, you probably should have just taken that part.
Yeah, I don't think she could have done it justice either, but
no,
would have been closer than Jackie Chan to Simon Phoenix. Dennis Leary's part was rewritten after he was cast. They wanted to let him rant, and boy, did they.
He definitely put a stamp on that one. And it's funny. Like he goes well. He blends in. The title was taken from the Police's song of the same name, hence the use of Sting to remake the song for the movie. And man, that song is dumb.
That's an understatement.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You and I watched the movie together, a rarity for us to get to do that, to be in the same place at the same time. And didn't it come on afterwards and we looked at each other like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, yeah, just awful.
Oh, Sting.
Just an awful song.
From Dune to this.
Well, that, yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure Sting has many more times where we'll be making fun of him. But that also is a Lethal Weapon problem. Like, those movies I love.
Yep.
But that song, which isn't a Sting song, Your Love Is Like a Lethal Weapon, I'm pretty sure it's him.
Oh my
too.
God.
I don't know. But it's bad. It's not good.
For some non-American releases, references to Taco Bell were changed to Pizza Hut, since the former was virtually unknown in many foreign countries at the time. This includes dubbing, plus changing the logos during post-production. Taco Bell remains in the closing credits. In both the Dutch and Swedish releases, the subtitles still use Taco Bell, while the sound and picture have been altered as above. Also, when using closed captioning on cable television, references to Taco Bell are changed to Pizza Hut. Oh my God.
But that seems so unnecessary. It's a fictional film. Who cares if they knew about Taco Bell or not? They could have just played it up as a fictional restaurant.
But
unless Pizza Hut needed the, you know, the dollars to...
As I say, to your point, Taco Bell's sales did really well as a result. And so in other countries, they must have thought, how can we have a similar impact? We don't have Taco Bell. Let's do Pizza Hut. But they could have just done Pizza Hut across the board, right?
Yeah.
Some executive thought this was a great idea and caused everybody a major headaches across the board for 27 years to come.
When they show them serving the tiny tortilla chips, were those supposed to be small slices of pizza? Or did they just cut that out?
I have to go back and watch again. Did they make them like if they could be either? It could be pizza or a taco, whatever, you know, you call it.
What an effort to change that, though. Due to Warner Brothers' dislike of the first 2-plus-hour long cut of the movie, as well as various behind-the-scenes problems, they hired editor Stuart Baird to do some re-editing. The same thing happened to another Sylvester Stallone movie, Tango and Cash, in 1989, which was also heavily re-edited by Baird and others. Originally in this movie, there were some additional scenes, including Spartan meeting his grown-up daughter in the sewers amongst Edgar Friendly's people. While cut, we do see Spartan protecting a random girl during a shootout in sewers. This is his daughter. She's also seen again in the ending scene standing next to Friendly while he is talking with Spartan. So she's not in the movie, but she is in the movie.
Yeah, and I would not have thought that was his daughter based on the final edit that we saw. I would like to see the 2-plus-hour cut. That would be very interesting. I wonder if it exists anywhere.
And I remember reading elsewhere that they were originally trying to... they were thinking about gearing it to where Sandra Bullock was going to be revealed as the daughter, but then... I don't know how much traction that got, but that would have been a terrible.
Yeah, once they had sex, that would have been very awkward.
Yeah.
Prediction. We will get that director's cut sometime in the next year to help promote the sequel. I'm going to go ahead and say it right here. That would be awesome. During filming, Rob Schneider became friends with Sandra Bullock, but had reservations about her next project, some bus movie that he didn't think would take off. Speed, 1994, was one of the next year's most critically and financially successful movies. Yeah. Some bus movie.
Yeah, and that was interesting for a couple of things. One, that it's coming off of, we talk about sort of action, different action movies. There's different action stars as well, you know? So there's Stallone and Schwarzenegger, these big beefy dudes. And then we get Keanu Reeves. You know, and Bruce Willis, you know, and Die Hard, these people that are not the traditional sort of things. And I think that's pretty cool. And that was a big role for her, but it was still a supporting role. And it wasn't really, even though it was an action movie, she didn't do a ton of action in that. So like her her career. I think it was maybe The Net or something where we finally, she was the lead role. And that movie was pretty big too. Everybody liked her. She was just instantly likable.
Yeah.
So I think she was always destined to do something. The opening scene featured the actual demolition of one of the buildings of the no longer operative Belknap Hardware and Manufacturing Company in Louisville, Kentucky. MTV held a movie tie-in contest in which the grand prize winner got to press the button that triggered the explosion.
That's cool.
That is so rad. I want to blow up a building.
Man, we need to find that person and interview them. That's amazing. Like, what was that like to be on set that day?
Yeah, that's got to be cool. Why isn't that a regular contest? Buildings need to be destroyed. People want to destroy buildings. Pair these together. People would pay to be in. Like, you could cover the cost of the demolition by entry fees. People would pay hundreds of dollars to be potentially the destroyer of buildings.
Like an Omaze thing. Yeah, not only do you get to do it, but you get to be, like, featured as a cameo in the movie for a split second.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
That'd be rad.
Hey, speaking of, what did I just enter? I just entered a giveaway. Oh, they're making a Halo TV series, and the I can't remember the name of the guy who's going to play the Spartan chief, but they have a deal, and I entered it. You make a donation, you get entered, and you get to go to the set, be an extra, train with the trainers that train him, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff included with it as well. And you go like to Singapore or something as part of the trip to go do it all. Man, I entered that. I think I dropped $100 for charity for a chance to go and visit the set of Halo, the TV series. So cross your fingers. That would be a really cool behind the scene for movie retakes.
Oh, yeah. That'd be rad.
That would be so cool.
Cool.
Sorry, I took us off in a tangent there.
No.
In Kuwait, the Arabic title was Rambo the Destroyer. Since Rambo movies were very popular, the distributor thought associating Sylvester Stallone to Rambo in the title would sell more tickets. Man, that's jacked up. You think you're going to go see
another
Rambo?
Rename.
And then you just get this movie that's not tied at all?
Yeah, that outside of the renames where the creators specifically change, all those ones where they translate them into foreign titles, like, I love those so much. They're great. Because they're just so fun.
Same with Cars. They have to rename cars in other countries. Like, one, I forget which car it was. No, don't go or not go.
Yeah, the Chevy Nova.
That's it. Nova
didn't,
means no go.
Didn't sell in Mexico. Nova. Sylvester Stallone has stated in interviews that the idea behind the three seashells was there were two were used like chopsticks or to clamp together to pull waste out of the body, and the third was used to scrape what was left over. No explanation was made about how they were to be cleaned or sanitized between uses.
Gross. Ugh. And ow.
Yeah.
You don't need some soft, cushy 10-ply toilet paper. Here, scrape your bunghole with the edge of a sharp shell. No, thank you.
How is everybody not cursing constantly in the future?
There's no way that's what they were. I hope we never find out. Fred Decker did uncredited rewrites on the script. When he was brought on, the script began in the future, and Spartan was introduced when he was brought out of suspended animation. Decker suggested that this movie open with a prologue set in 1996 to showcase Spartan and Phoenix in their natural environment, saying that if you don't show Kansas, Oz isn't all that special. So true. That added a much more depth to the film.
Yeah. That's pretty cool to show them in their elements before they were brought out of their element. That did a lot.
That's one of the biggest criticisms, and I'm not often a critic. I'm pretty open to anything that's created, delivered to me, but it's all about character development. If you can't get me emotionally vested in the characters in some way, then I'm not gonna be into the film. It's not gonna be rewatchable. It's gonna be a throwaway. You know, what was one of the Terminator with Emilia Clarke and that guy that kills all franchises. My God, I did not care at all that those two had an interest in each other. They both were horrible in that film. I don't know what it was. Was that Genesis? I think it was Genesis.
Genesis.
God.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that was not good.
I didn't care about either one. I cared more about Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, We thank you again for coming to listen to another episode of Movie Retakes, and we hope you keep coming back. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe, like, love, do all those fun, wonderful things to support us. We really appreciate it. And go give a review if you've got time as well.
I know it's a crappy place to put this, but I forgot to do it earlier. So here's a keyword for our giveaway.
Oh, man.
That might stem out of this. We don't normally wait till the very end. The keyword, it's a simpler one. Phoenix.
That's a true reward for those that stuck around. Thanks. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Perhaps well, thanks, everybody. It's been Oldies? A lot of fun. Good to see you, bro.
Nerds Unite.
This is the most popular station in town. Wall-to-wall mini-tunes. You call them commercials.
Here's that classic you've all been waiting for. The number one request of the day. Armor hot dogs.
Kids eat Armor hot dogs.
Oh, wow. This is my fave.
Kids who climb on rocks, dog kids, sissy kids,
even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs, the dogs kids love to bite.
Somebody put me back in the fridge.